You're listening to the ModernDogTrainer.net podcast, bringing you the best industry tips and topics for professional dog trainers worldwide.
Hi there, you're listening to the Modern Dog Trainer podcast. I'm Ines McNeil, founder of the Modern Dog Trainer blog and podcast, and today I'm chatting with Kat Camplin, my co-host, and Nan Arthur.
Before we go too much further, don't forget to add the podcast to your favorite RSS feed or iTunes podcasts. You can also follow us on Twitter at Modern Trainer and on Facebook. All the links are in the show notes at themoderndogtrainer.net. So put your feet up, grab something to drink, and let's get started.
Awesome. So welcome, Nan. Can you tell us a little bit about yourself?
Sure. Yes, I've been doing this for about 23 years, this being dog training and behavior work. It was a career change for me right about the age of 40. So it was completely new and different. I was a writer and photographer in the auto racing industry and had done that career for quite a number of years. And so when my children were graduating from high school, there was a little empty nest going on, and I decided that I would like to have a puppy. And I wanted, an Australian Shepherd, and I wanted one in blue. Great criteria, right? That was because I saw them at the fair. And so, you know, saw them working and went, oh, they're so cool. So I researched. I'm good at researching, thank goodness. And, you know, found out about the breed, the needs and all of that, and brought home my very first puppy as an adult. And she's the one that set me down the road because it wasn't anything like I thought it was going to be.
It's always a dog.
It's all the dog. Yeah. Yep. Yep. It's, yeah. I mean, you know, and unfortunately I started off, you know, thinking I was doing everything right because, you know, 23 years ago, it was a correction based world for, you know, taking your puppies to classes and whatnot. And I probably would have continued down that road without any further knowledge had it not been for the instructor that was in that, that was teaching the manners class that I took her to when she was about 6 months old on a choke chain. And I was waiting for the other people that were coming in the class one evening, and a young couple with their first dog came in, and he was barking, and it was an Irish setter, and it's so clear in my mind still, the instructor took the lead from the people, slammed the dog against a wall, and said, "You need to correct this dog harder," while the dog screamed, and I was like, "I can't do that." Yeah. And so that's what set me down the path of thinking there's got to be a better way. So that's sort of where it all began.
So what actually got you into professional dog training? I mean, doing it from your own dog is one thing, but what you know, now you're taking on clients. What got you into that?
I started reading more and more. I came across Don't Shoot the Dog. It's that way. And went, oh, there are different ways to think about things. And then I started volunteering at a shelter. What led me to that was I had adopted a dog. I wanted a second dog, and I adopted the absolute wrong dog on an emotional heart tug situation. And it definitely did not work out, and I had to take the dog back. And I went, I don't want that to happen to other people. So I started volunteering at a shelter and with a group called Friends of County Animal Shelters Focus. And they had a program they just started. They got funding to put adoption counselors in all three of the county shelters in San Diego, which are huge, massive shelters. And I was in the one shelter where it was the largest shelter of all. And it was there that I started learning more. And then I was actually hired as that adoption counselor to be able to learn more and, you know, learn about adoptions, learn about dog behavior. And there's nothing better than working in a shelter than to get more hands-on, learn more about, you know, behavior and all of that. And hopefully, you know, start to educate myself a little. And I went, wow, I love this behavior stuff. It was so interesting and so fascinating. And it was just one of the things that I just wanted to learn more. So I started going to seminars and workshops, and you know, I was an adoption counselor, but I would, you know, consider myself sort of a pro at that point. And I stayed at the county for 5 years, and and then the San Diego Humane Society began looking for a behavior staff. Madeline Gabriel, who was ended up being my boss, was in San Diego doing behavior, and is a very well-known dogs and children behavior person, hired me to work with them. And then I stayed there for 4 years. And again, just learning, went to, you know, the very first West Coast Clicker Expo, and just was blown away. Like, whoa, I want to do this for realsie. And so, you know, it just, you know, I've never stopped my educational process at all. And so, you know, one thing led to another. I worked at Humane for 4 years, and then I started my own business, which I've been doing for the last 13 years or so. So that's kind of where it all began. And, you know, it's led, you know, into different trails, such as, you know, Care and Prior Academy. I'm a graduate from that group, and have since become a faculty member, as well as a instructor for Dog Techs, Dog Walking Academy. Also a canine first aid instructor, which is something that was real interesting and fun to do as well. So, yeah, I'm always trying to grow.
Yeah, for sure. And speaking of KPA, how did you become a faculty member there?
Yeah, it's an interesting story. When Clicker Expo was going to come to San Diego, it was their second year, I believe. They went to Berkeley, and then I think San Diego was next. And when I heard that they were coming here to San Diego, I thought, gosh, it would be really cool to meet Karen, you know, and have her come and tour the new shelter, because they just finished building the $10 million shelter, you know, for San Diego Humane. And so I found an email somewhere and jotted a little note and said, you know, while you're in San Diego for Clicker Expo, wondering if you would like to come and tour the building and, you know, our brand new, you know, shelter and all of that, and sort of forgot about it. And about a week later, I got a email back from Karen herself. And she said, yes, absolutely, I would love to. And she said, we also need some help with Clicker Expo, bringing dogs for demos. And, you know, we want to have some dogs from the shelter to, you know, to be a part of that. So we went out to lunch and dinner and, you know, a couple of different things while she was here, and did a lot of talking. She toured the shelter. If you've ever seen the picture of Karen with a little rat on her shoulder, that's a picture I took of her at San Diego Humane. And she was fascinated by the, you know, we had a therapy dog or a therapy animal program there, and that's where the rat came from. And those animals would go out to different venues and visit with people and help them, you know, with their lack of fur in the facilities. And so she was fascinated by that. And so a couple years later, when KPA was being formulated, I ran into Karen somewhere, one of the Clicker Expos. She was there, and we were talking, and she said they were already they were on their first group already, so they already had done their very first group of, and that was in New Mexico with Danny Weinberg. Said, are you interested in becoming a faculty member? And I said, yeah. Yeah. Like, you know, Karen's a rock star in our world. And anytime she wants you to do something, you know, with them, it's like awesome. So I it was required that new faculty member, potential faculty members actually took the course and passed it. And so I did that. I also did it with Danny Weinberg. So I was the second graduating group. And so I've traveled around too. You know, so I've done, I did Boulder for a few years and good buds from Boulder, who's now on staff with KPA and speaks at Clicker Expo. And Shelley Bauer, who's another one that was with Lindsay at the same time, and she's now on staff with KPA. And so it sort of goes on. You know, there's some really neat people that have been, you know, that have become. Sarah Owings is now a faculty member, was one of my grads, and now works as a faculty for KPA. So there's a lot of, you know, tie-ins, which is nice that not only are people getting the education with, you know, good training, they also have some potential to, you know, to move within the company itself. So.
So since you train so many other trainers now, what do you think are the top three skills a trainer needs to be really like a professional dog trainer?
Oh yeah. I've been kind of noodling that a little bit. You know, I think probably one of the areas that I see most neglected in trainers that haven't come through a program like KPA that's so focused on fluency is that they don't understand what a fluent behavior is. And, you know, it's get it done, get it quick, get it fast, but it doesn't hold together. Because it's lacking all the different things that it, you know, that a behavior needs to make it, you know, solid and fluid and have stimulus control and all that. So I think learning, you know, really having the education and having that knowledge is like the most important thing to so you really understand what a behavior truly is to be a fluent behavior so it can hold together when you need it. Other skills, I think, is learning to love people. I hear that from so many people. And I love Kat, you know, you always put such fun, inspirational things that your clients say on Facebook and elsewhere. And it's always fun to hear somebody pull positive things out like that and go, my clients are cool. Because dogs are easy. It's the people that we need to work with to get them to change what they're doing. And so I think having good people skills and really appreciating how much angst so many people are going through with their dogs and how much it's so stressful for them and nerve-wracking for them. And they're on edge, you know, a lot of times with some of the stuff that I deal with. And so having good people skills and being able to support them and understand where they're coming from and why they hate their dog in the moment and being able to move that forward into showing them that their dog is smart and they can learn and, you know, moving them forward. So I think the people skills is a really big one. I tell a lot of the people that are coming through KPA that if they don't feel comfortable with people, get some education, take some communication classes, do improv. That's one of the things that has helped me more than anything with people skills. I was really good before that. I like people a lot, and I love to help them get those aha moments. But being able to use improv rules, which are basically you don't negate somebody. So even if they say, I love my choke chain or I love my pinch collar, rather than saying, to be able to come back to them and say, yes, a lot of people do. And here's some new things to think about. So that's yes and, that's part of improv. So being able to use that kind of technique and not go, that's awful what you're doing to your dog. Being able to say, I get it, I understand why. And here's some other things that you can think about. So those communication skills are good. Third on the list would be body language, understanding the dogs. Really letting the dog be the teacher and give that feedback back and forth, because they have all the knowledge that we need to teach them. We just need to learn how to recognize it and realize what it is so that we can apply principles of positive reinforcement toward the behaviors that are going to help them, whether it be just basic manners or we're working on a behavior issue. And those would be my top three.
All right. So it's 2018 already. I can't believe where the years have gone. Next year will be the 10-year anniversary of the publication of your book, Chill Out, Fido. Mm-hmm. So what made you write it? What was missing in the community? And how'd that happen?
Okay. Well, I have a background in writing. So that was, that wasn't the hard part. It was really selfish, actually. I have a 14 or 15, no, 17 page handout that I would print to give to people. And it had a lot of the same things that were just not expanded like it is in the book, but a lot of the same things in that handout about body language and, relax on a mat and, just some of the, and diet and, understanding dog behavior and things they could do, that kind of stuff. And I just got darn tired of printing it.
That makes sense.
And so I went to Dogwise and I said, hey, I have an idea. And I really, all I wanted to do was have a little booklet, like one of Patricia McConnell's little booklets. That's all I wanted to do. And so I proposed that to them that way. And they said, oh, we see a real book in this. I'm like, okay, if you do, help me, because I've never written a book before. And they were wonderful. Dogwise, anybody that wants to publish, they're a great group of people. And if you have a good topic that, is going to be something that has general interest, they're excellent people to work for and with, because they helped, come up with all of the, how to put the book together and all of that, the parts that I didn't know, and they were really good at it. But yeah, so that was where it kind of started from, is that, it was just sort of selfish on my part.
So, like she said, it's been almost 10 years. Is there anything you would add or change in the book now?
Yeah, there's a couple things for sure. I mean, everything evolves, especially in our world of science. We know so much more about dogs 10 years later than when I wrote that book. It's amazing what we know. And so I would probably incorporate a little more science into it, with the basis of why and wherefores, but without getting too techie, because the book was really meant to be for the general public. Right. That needs help. I would definitely change my relax on the mat protocol a bit, because I think as you play with these things, I've done it so many times myself, and I know how to adjust and quick changes needed for the dog in front of me and all of that. But the general public doesn't, and so they're following a recipe that doesn't always work. And so I would make it more reinforcing for them and the dog. There would be a little different protocol in terms of how long you work on it and reinforcement history and all of that sort of thing. I would change that up a bit. For trainers, it works really well. And then we all know how to adjust all of that, as needed for the individual. But the general public doesn't always. And so we get a lot of fake relaxing.
Right.
the dogs, they get it pretty good to begin with, but then the dog is waiting for more and they forget to feed them. And then so the dog looks up and then they wait till the dog puts their head down and then they feed again. And so then you get this nice little behavior chain of I look up at you, I put my head down, I look up at you, and on and on. So I would mush that around a little bit more. But the beginning of the book, I probably wouldn't, other than having more citations for people if they want to go see other things, right. I would change some of that. And then the one thing I definitely would change is my little scoring sheet that I included in the back, how anxious is your dog sort of thing, or how stressed is your dog. I would definitely make that more user-friendly. It's a little confusing, and I would just, I would change the scoring system on it to make it a little less complicated with some of the way the words are the questions are worded.
So you mentioned the relax on a mat and relaxation, mm-hmm. and it is one of those things that it's in the positive reinforcement community, it really is everywhere, and every single problem from now until eternity is always, oh, well, you start with relax on a mat. It just seems to be the first go-to suggestion when trainers are asking other trainers for advice. And then mm-hmm. I guess my question is there any instances where you shouldn't look for relaxation, where relax on the mat isn't one of the first catch-alls that you would go to?
Oh, absolutely. You know, I loved being at Clicker Expo this year with the theme that kind of ran through. There was this thread that sort of ran through a lot of the talks, which was the emotional context of behavior. Mm-hmm. So if you're working with an animal that is categorized, I'm going to label this right now just because it's simple to say, in the shy, fearful arena. If you're working on relax on the mat and you have that emotional context of that fear going on, you're just building strength into that behavior. So in that case, no. Then I would build confidence building behaviors, things like that. It's not technically that easy for some of these dogs that people would label hyper to get to a good place with relax on the mat, because they need different type of mental stimulation first that gets them thinking, because most of those dogs are what I call myopic, where they, you know, it's trigger, react, trigger, react. There's not a whole lot else going on in their brains because it's such a strong neural pathway to do that. When they see something that is, you know, exciting or scary or whatever causes chemicals to flow in the system, those dogs, I want them to be thinking. I'm trying to get them to get outside of that kind of back and forth process of trigger react, where they can actually start to think about the world in a different way. So for those kind of dogs, I don't often start with mat work at all. I often start with things that are going to really get their physical body different. So I use a lot of like doggy parkour, where we're getting them to think about their feet. They have to think about their bodies and how they move. One of the exercises that has been in the Karen Pryor Academy program is to teach the dog to lick on cue. And that's a behavior that I do teach a lot of dogs, because they have to think about it. It's, you know, it's a reflexive behavior to begin with, but then they have to slow down enough to actually use something in their brain that's other than high speed. Right. So I try to, you know, to work them outside of the box a lot in that regard. And that usually doesn't include relax on the mat. I might add that in later, you know, where it can be something that's just a nice tool for people to take on the road with them. But it's not the end all by any means. I mean, I love the exercise for a lot of different reasons, but yeah, it's not you have to teach this in order to get, you know, a behavior problem solved. Because you still have to always think about that emotional context that, you know, is there with the animal that you're, you know, reinforcing heavily in that particular behavior. Are you reinforcing, you know, that emotional context as well? So, yeah. Does that make sense?
Absolutely. Okay.
And I guess my last question for you is, you know, since you've become a KPA faculty member, you've come across a lot of new trainers over the years. Have you noticed any new trends in those trainers, and kind of what do you see for the future of the industry based on, you know, how these new trainers are coming into the system?
Yeah, that's such a great question, because it's different. So when I took KPA, most of the people that were taking it at that time had dog training experience. They were looking for certification. They were looking for clarity in their training, that sort of thing. But they had hands-on, you know, sometimes long-term dog training experience. So it wasn't like a huge difference, mm-hmm. other than to hone their skills. What I see more now is, you know, we've gone through most of those people. Now we're getting, you know, a younger sect of people coming through, which is awesome, because they're, you know, people that have never had a correction tool in their hands ever in their life, which is nice. So they have no concept of any of that. Or if they have, it's, you know, it's not been long term. They don't have a lot of bad habits. And that's a wonderful component of it. But there is a lack of people skills. That's one thing that I think really, is that emphasis is, it's so important, is that learning to communicate in a way, in a means that is clickery, as Karen would say, where, you know, we're using tag teach teaching with acoustical guidance kind of ideals in the way we work with our clientele. Having the tag teach component in KPA is really awesome because we can really expand on that a lot and help them get better at looking for the positive things and complimenting and using those things with their clients rather than always going, stop to the people. Even though you may want to say that sometimes, it's not good teaching and it's not effective at helping them learn, right, as we know. And then I think that I think there is a different way that younger people have study skills that just is a little different for me. I mean, when I went through KPA and through school and all of that, I'm a very strong researcher. I'm a really hard worker at everything, and that's me, and I recognize that. But it seems like there's a little more of a trend where it's, we'll get to it. So we try to really emphasize with that. with the students that, this is really important. I know you don't want to write stuff all the time. That's not the training part, but it's part of the deal. You've got to learn to write. You got to contact clients. You've got to, be able to, extrapolate this information into written form because you're going to need to send it to your clients and things like that. So I try to really kind of push my students to, to take that very seriously because it's part of becoming a good dog trainer. We need all of the communication skills that we can come across. But the nice thing is that they're a feisty generation, this young group, which is good. It's like the kids from Florida. I mean, they're out there pushing, and they've got a mission. And the young people that are coming through KPA are the same way. They want to get rid of the choke chains and the pinch collars and the electric collars. They really want to push toward doing it well and doing it right and making it for the dogs in the world. And I see their attachments to their dogs so strong. And that's such a lovely thing to be able to witness, that there's this this movement, this passion that's gonna hopefully override a lot of this icky stuff that's out there.
Those are all my questions. Kat, did you have anything else?
No, I'm pretty brain dead.
Me too. Awesome. Well, thank you so much for joining us. It's a pleasure.
Yeah, thank you so much.
You're very welcome. Thank you.
Do you love the podcast? Looking for more to grow your dog training business? Check out our website at themoderndogtrainer.net to learn more from our blog, join our Facebook group, or take a course. Ross Malcolm Boyd edits the program, but he does a lot more than that. Visit rossmalcolmboyd.com for rainbow unicorns, online music lessons, and more.
Thank you for listening to the Modern Dog Trainer podcast. Don't forget, you can check out the show notes at themoderndogtrainer.net/podcast. You can also share your thoughts and support our podcast by leaving a review on iTunes. Until next time.